I also think that there is work that has to be done on the part of those who have experienced the trauma. If they are fortunate enough to still feel some connection to God, to a higher power, to spirit. I've met some queer Black folks who who will tell me immediately, you know, that I'm wrong, right? That like they grew up understanding that the Bible said particular things about, you know, about gayness, about gay people, about homosexual relationships, whatever. And so like, you know, I must be wrong about all of the progressive things that I think about it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that people have to be willing to give up the stories that they were told and to accept in many ways that the stories that they were told were funneled through flawed human creatures. And I think it's difficult for people to give up those stories that traumatized them, because they were told to them by people that they presume love them and that they know they have experiences of loving them. And so what does it mean for me to give up the narrative that Christianity is always already antagonistic to queerness?
The biggest piece is being to be able to realize that the AAPI communities, like Stop Asian Hate, like all of our rallies and protests and like all these voices coming together, they are influenced a lot by the BLM movement and the Black community. Like we really wouldn't have the inspiration or the voice if we didn't have like something to model it after. Like I think like the Black Lives Matter and like the Black community has definitely had a longer history of unjust and unrest in this country. So we've learned a lot from them. And I think like spreading that information, like that piece, what I just said, and educating like our peers, our parents, that like, listen, these things are happening to the Asian community, but it's been happening a lot longer for Black community. And then like helping them realize like this is all like the same. And we shouldn't be pitting ourselves against each other for that reason. And like, I think a lot of where the whiteness, like Asians aligning themselves with whiteness comes in, really comes from like survival from back then, like assimilation.
Even in my life, like I've experienced great pain, but I've also experienced amazing joy. And I refuse to allow a narrative to be presented to the world that my life is miserable. Like, all you, like, so one thing I don't do on my social media, and I don't share when trans women get murdered. I don't, because I feel like I don't share it. Like, because I just feel like other people are sharing it out there, but that's not our truth. That's not our truth. People are killing us. That's not our truth. You understand? We are new. We're not, we're victims. We should not, like, and you know, there's a lot of trans women, like they, like, I don't think this, though, because I'm a fighter, like, I'm, you already know, I'm going to fight you. So the thing is that I don't think that I'm going to die at the hands of, like, a man. Like, that's not my fear. Like, you know, I do walk down the streets, and I like, you know, sometimes a guy, like, I may get a little nervous or scared, but, like, I'm not scared that, like, a man is going to, like, hurt me or kill me. But some trans women really think that, and that's why I don't share that, because I have a platform of Black trans women that follow me, and I'm not going to inject that into their lives even more than is already being done. We should not live in fear where I'm afraid to leave my house because of, like, there's monsters out here that can't control, like, couldn't control themselves.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And basically, I like to share joy. I like to share the great things that we are doing. Trans people are doing so many great things. Black trans people are doing great things in this world, really, and have been for a long time. And I just want to, I want to use my platform to showcase the joy that we experience and the growth so that young people can know that it is possible.
And I want other people who do have, who are similar to me or might have like other other things that they're dealing with, you know, not just specifically ADHD, but, you know, I want to be able to like kind of push this message of like, you know, don't think that you have a disorder. Don't think that like there's this thing that's wrong with you. And instead, just treat that thing as just, you know, that's just who you are. You're just like this type of person. You're this kind of person. You know what I mean? And that's kind of where Scattered Mind came in, like just like this acceptance and this positive perspective of who you are.
These friendships are like, it's like your mirror.
Yeah.
Right. We don't want to have that breaking up conversation in relationships that we are intimate. Right.
Yeah.
It's like, you hurt me. You did these things and I was opening up to you. I let you in and this is what you did to hurt me. And I can't have that anymore. So we need to have a conversation to like really end this and let it be known that like we're done. Like, honestly, I can't move forward with you. Mm-hmm. That same conversation and how we have those breakup processes in terms of intimate relationships happen with friendships, but we truly at the core do not want to have those conversations. So that's where ghosting, to me, in my opinion, that's where ghosting comes in. And that's where like fizzling out comes in and things like that.
I think for me, God was and is in the pandemic in something in my own spirit being made more tender to the reality and the preciousness of life. Mm. And that tenderness, I pray, will give me and others who also feel that a greater sense of what our lives could look like, and also then the will to begin reimagining the world in the spirit of that tenderness.
Thinking through this season, there is one theme that has run through every conversation and every story we've highlighted. And that theme is community, the love for community, and this idea that community is part of self, and this idea that community care is part of self-care. I think if we reflect back in episode one with Father Paul Daniels around sort of reframing the story around what the church means to us and taking this time to be still, part of that was this idea of how we belong to a community of people. And if we think about the conversation we had with Joanne from East Side Stories or with Andrew around the Great Resignation, all of that was reframing what we think about community. All of that was creating platforms and creating environments of group activities where community played a forefront. I think that was very important. And if we think about our conversation with Julia Love, that also carried with it the spirit of the idea that community love and showing community love for trans people. And so I think if you reflect back the past 2 years and all the current events that are going on in the world, what is it that the world is trying to tell us? I think for me, it's telling us that community care is self-care, that community is such an important pillar in our lives that it defines who we are, it defines how we go about our day, it defines our stresses, our joys, our despoils of life. So, for the season finale of Sitting Living with Churchill, we're going to take a reflection on community care and self-care, how those two are intertwined. And how are we going to do that? Well, I am your guest for this final episode. I think it only makes sense to close it out with reading with you an essay I wrote, making the argument about the importance of self-care. I was broken dead at birth. After many grueling hours of labor, I finally decided to make an entrance into this world. My entrance, however, was sickening. I was very blue-collared, wheezing, and my appendages were disjointed. One of the doctors declared my condition terminal with merely just days to live. However, two doctors decided to think otherwise. Over the next 2 months, they took shifts to care for me while I was in the critical care unit. My mom was not able to breastfeed me due to the strain on her body from labor. My aunt made a deal with one of the other moms in the maternity ward. She said she would cook meals for her in exchange for breast milk. My first breastfeeding experience did not come from my mom, but from a stranger who was at a hospital. Every time my mom tells me this story, I think about the circumstances a lot. I wonder, if we were in the same scenario in America, would I have survived? What would have happened if the other mom had just minded her business or really focused on her situation? What would have happened if everyone had just focused on their individual needs? Over the last several years, the self-care movement has become a viral craze where focusing on self and only self has become paramount. If you go on social media platforms these days, you'll find several quotes from focusing on yourself and healing your past trauma. They will say that minding your business is good for your health, and if someone is not giving you what you want, then you shouldn't have them in your life. Over the years, we have built the belief system that self has to come first, that self needs to be fixed before one engages society in a meaningful way. Yet, society influences the self more than any other factors. We confuse self-reliance and personal grit for self-understanding and wholeness. We don't give enough credit to how influential our friends and surrounding communities are in creating our perception of self. Surely, if we lived on a planet by ourselves, then the amount of self-work would make sense. We do not. Our daily activities require others. Our rituals talk about treating others like ourselves. Most of the accomplishments we have in life are not just achieved by ourselves, but in the company of others. Our social networks and what we know determines how our social mobility and opportunities happen. Moses did not free the Israelites by himself, even while ordained by God. He needed help of many, and yet he did not see the promised land. Yes, it is critical to love ourselves. It is also important to understand the people around us and the societal construct that enable us to form self. No amount of self-care, introspection, or therapy is going to solve the deep-rooted systemic issues of socioeconomic inequalities, social injustice, and a society built to help a few and suffocate the rest with minimal resources. No wonder we feel anxiety-ridden and stressed when we are being told solving such huge societal issues starts at the individual level. Dating people in society has also become a game. If it does not work, I can just pick another. The style of just changing or treating people like disposable toys does not work in deepening relationships. There's a certain type of bond that comes from going through fire with someone. It takes work and continual effort to build love and keep the flame going. I believe the biggest fallacy most people have is to think that love and engaging another human being should be easy. As Diana Ross and the Supreme Best put it, you can't hurry love, you just have to wait. It's a game of give and take. Yet, many of us think mostly enjoying the spoils of the extracting, of the taking, but less about giving or the nurturing that is needed for love or the healthy relationship to bloom. The individualistic nature protruding through society today is a threat to the idea of community and camaraderie. Even more so, the idea of self-care has become a marketing pyramid scheme. Every guru-inspired person, myself included, has become an expert on human behavior that thinks highlighting call quotes from Buddhist teachings or Teacher Mac's notebooks means that they possess some grander life awareness. No, I'm tired of being told going to therapy is the optimal option for being more aware and coping with life, or that at the end of it, I will magically become a more wholesome person. Yes, therapy does have some great benefits. However, learning about self extends beyond the 1 hour session talking to a therapist. In an attempt to protect our fragile egos from hurt and be more self-preserved, we have built echo chambers of friends that only confirm and agree with what we think. They do not challenge those bases of perspective of society. If someone has an opinion we do not agree with, we shut them out, we mute them from our feeds in the name of self-care. We forget that a person doesn't just stop existing or influencing us just because we eliminate them from our immediate bubble. Their influence, like water ripples when skipping rocks, eventually reaches us. The overfocus of self-care has created a scarcity culture that will always make us feel we aren't enough. We ride the euphoric high of likes and comments on social media, extracting from the world self-validation, but distancing myself from the people that give it. Fear has become our go-to emotion. The fear of not having enough, doing enough, not enough money, food, confidence, likability, ultimately that we are not enough. I believe we are afraid the world will see us for who we are, and thus we retract into the self. Perhaps our pursuit of the greatest illusion called perfection has led us down this rabbit hole of always needing to smooth our rough edges. The anxiety, the angst, the constant battle of trying to fill a void remains as long as we are not addressing the root cause. Yes, self-reliance, caring for one's well-being is good. However, we do not live in a world of our own. We must understand that the community around us shapes who we are. Me being alive today, 28 years later, is due to the community of strangers coming together, letting go of their personal wants, and for 2 months, sacrificing a lot of self so I can survive. So let's reframe the conversation and change the lens of seeing self-care and self-love, not as an individual-only work, but as an understanding of the world around us, the relationship we make, and the communities we build. Reform our sense of self by interacting, being, and communicating with each other. I wrote that essay in mind, thinking through how very much, you know, everywhere you look, anywhere you read, self-care has become such a very powerful, you know, almost I think it's like a marketing. I do think of a bit of a pyramid scheme. I think it's very important that we push self-care. But I think part of self-care that has been missing is this idea that community, the importance of community as part of self-care. If I think personally for myself, as part of my own COVID pandemic journey, what have I learned? What have I see? What is my takeaway? My takeaway is the importance of community. My takeaway is that a lot of who we are and what we want to be, a lot of how we consume, how we go about our day, our stressors, is driven by a community, by a people. And so I don't just believe in this idea of self-care as this individual-driven work. I think of self-care as a community-driven work. Self-care as a wellness of how your friends are doing. Self-care as a wellness of how your community is doing, how you engage and interacting with people. You learn more about yourself when you're out interacting with people and having to see yourself mirror. That's how you understand what your boundaries are. I also think that's how you understand who you are, by interacting with people. But if all you do is sort of do an introspection and retract from society, you don't actually get to know who you are when it comes in relationship with others, which is more important. Because I think we don't live on a planet by ourselves. We live on a planet with many people. And it's so very critical for us to think about self in relationship to those people and how our multidimensional selves come out and how we interact. Where do we start and stop? And understand that if our communities are not well and where we belong are not well, then we don't do well. We don't do well. And that's why I think when folks like Joanne create platforms that amplify voices, they're creating community, community wellness. They're showcasing a different perspective of a community because they understand that if the community is well, then they are well. And I believe strongly in that. I believe strongly in, you know, how we retell the stories about who we are in relation to our communities, retelling our traumatic stories into something more positive, something more empowering to both ourselves and to uplifting and changing the narrative within a community. I think those are all very critical components. So when I wrote this essay, I was trying to not potentially say that self-care is not even like a self-care part where it's your individual work in, you know, Sunday self-care, taking care of yourself, pampering yourself. Those are all very important. Showing kindness to yourself. Every episode I end is would be kind to yourself. That's because I do believe in that. But I also think kindness to self extends beyond just the individual. Kindness to self extends into the world you live in. If you're not kind to yourself, you won't be kind to anyone. And so self-care and community self, they're sort of intertwined together. I want to really push that. So as we end this season, I implore you to think about that, to think about how you are in relationship to your community, who you are in relationship to your community, what does community mean to you, and how do you tie the wellness of your community to your own individual wellness? As I said, self-care and who you are, the idea of self, is determined and influenced by your friends. That's why we have the saying, show me your friends and I'll show you who you are. Because those two are so very intertwined and are together. So to end season 2 of Still Living with Churchill, I implore you to look within yourself, to see and ask the question, what is it you're giving to this city? What is it you're giving to the world? What do you want people to feel? How do you want to reshape your community? And how can you intertwine that identity and that want into who you are, into building your sense of self? We'll be back in a few months. maybe a year, with season 3. If you enjoyed today's episode and podcast, please rate and review on Apple and Spotify podcasts. It takes listeners like you that keep the podcast going. And most importantly, as always, be kind to yourself.